We're just kind of playing this kind of cat and mouse game of like, does this do what Justin really wants it to do?
Right.
You know, or what kind of loopholes could they potentially see?
You're almost playing hot cold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like exactly.
Warmer.
Yeah. Marco Polo.
Dude. Exhausted at the end of...
Yeah, dude, I'm kind of jet lagged as heck for this episode right now, but we owe the people something, you know?
Yeah, we're walking back to our rooms, event's over, and we're like, oh, we haven't recorded yet.
Yeah, we went out for like, what is that?
Korean barbecue,
man. I ate so much rice and beef, I was very happy, but yeah, we owe the people an episode, so we're going to bring you guys... some good insights. And I have to say, I'm coming off of like almost a month of like hardcore hacking. So the
back-to-back events.
Yeah, back-to-back events. We had the HackerOne live hacking event. And now we're just finishing up the Google live hacking event. So I've definitely got like a lot of motivation to pull from for content for the episode.
And you don't really go easy on any of
the events. Dude. I took these seriously, man. It was really fun. So we've each got a couple points we want to hit. You want to start off or shall I?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think we were talking about this right before we started recording, but what surprised you? I mean, at this point, how many Google events have you been to?
4 or 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was a pretty small one. I think they only invited like 15 people or something.
Yeah. 15 or 20.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you like what stood out or felt different or surprising about this one?
I think there are just a lot better bugs at this event, you know, like
there were so many high quality bugs.
There were some really, really killer bugs. Yeah. And yeah, lots of creativity from the researcher, lots of impact proved hardcore this event, mm-hmm. you know, like I think we're starting to get a little bit of a grip in general, us being researchers on how to do zero click, AI bugs, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that is, like it's getting to the point now where I'm like, okay, that's actually some really serious impact, yeah. you know, I think that's really nice to see. Whereas I feel like, you know, I've spent a lot of time over the past couple of years wrangling, you know, unruly AI and like begging it to work, you know,
yeah, that's true.
And it's nice to see some actual like zero click impact.
Yeah. And the POCs were extremely high quality.
Yeah.
Which you almost have to do these days.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then they're not easy. Like it gets harder and harder to do high quality POCs with the more guardrails that companies are adding.
Yeah.
And especially Google, they're pretty good at guardrails.
Freaking good at guardrails. Yeah. But you need your exploit to be more deterministic.
Yep.
And you, so the prompt, you know, the prompting or even the social engineering context mm-hmm. needs to be very strong. Mm-hmm. I know Bus had a really, really awesome bug this event. You know, where he put a lot of effort into the social engineering context for one of his exfiltrations. And, you know, it just made a lot of sense. You know, it just, the AI is like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I should comply with that. And, you know, he had a very, very consistent exploit, which mm-hmm. is cool. I think aside from that, you know, it's just, I'll say it time and time again, it is a game changer to be able to work with the Googlers to build your exploits.
Yeah.
You know, like that is a very underrated thing, you know, in the live hacking meta world.
Yeah. I had a question specifically about that.
Yeah.
I feel like you like said to me, what are you doing? Go grab a Googler and do a thing.
Yeah.
And so I sat there and I was just like, what would I even ask them about? And it was like kind of mind blowing to me both then and just now when I was reflecting on it and writing questions down that you had mental clarity about enough things that you would have just sat there all day.
Yeah.
And continued to like go down these code paths. And I didn't have any like leads that were like that. Do you know what I mean?
I feel like you hack a little differently than that too.
I do. Yeah.
I think you go where the leads are rather than like looking at something and digging out the leads in a lot of ways.
That's fair. Yeah, that's
you know?
Fair.
Mm-hmm. But for me, I lock in on a piece of scope and I just like dig at it, you know? Mm.
So even if you had no lead, you would just have them walk you through the code because you would see stuff in there that would trigger.
Yeah. I mean, typically I do it from a lead based perspective, you know, and so, it's fun working with them and just kind of getting their insights on, you know, they got the code open there, and I'm like, okay, so does it do this? And they're like, not quite, you know, yeah. like, you know, and we're just kind of playing this kind of cat and mouse game mm-hmm. of like, does this do what Justin really wants it to do?
Right.
You know, or what kind of loopholes could they potentially see?
You're almost playing hot cold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, exactly.
Warmer.
Marco Polo. Yeah. So it's a fun time. And I think, particularly this event, I got a lot of impact out of that, you know, like I just knowing how to work with them and then coming into the event each day with a list of questions being like, hey, these are the ones I need answers to, you know, and then just like sitting with them and asking questions about the code until I feel like I understand what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think that's very googly as well, you know, that these guys can just be like, you know, in the massive, massive organization that is Google, I can say, hey, here's an error message, search off this. And they find the code in like, you know, 20 seconds.
They also grok it.
Yeah.
Like they'll also read through the functions really quickly and understand exactly what's happening.
Yeah, dude, it's super googly.
That is.
So yeah, that was a blast. All right. My item that I want to talk about was, holy crap, dude. I got a reverse shell. You know, and this was an intended reverse shell. You know, this was just, you know, a pivot reverse shell, this event. And I was like, oh man, I'm typing into this shell and I feel slow because I'm so used to using Claude Code for more like advanced, you know, multi-step processes nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, whenever I got a reverse shell and I was in the command line, I felt like I was like max speed, you know, in the past, right? And so I was like, man, I can't do this. I got to get Claude Code in this stupid, you know, shell.
Yeah.
But it was like an NCAT reverse shell, right?
Right.
And so I was thinking about it and I was thinking about it and I just realized I can just tell Claude, just look at this tmux pane, right? And I have tmux open always in my you know, shell sessions. So I just told it, hey, write into this tmux pane. And dude, it was like, it just freaking gave it, you know, full access to the shell.
How does it do that though? I've always been curious about that. Does it basically just like pipe in, like almost like...
It's almost like a skill. There's a tmux, you know, command line where you can say tmux send dash keys or whatever.
Got it.
And it will just send those keys directly into
that
the
tmux pane.
Pane. And it had no problem doing that at all. You know, no escaping issues. I was trying to do weird stuff with like, you know, pipes and like socatting it into like a file and making it like an input output thing. Mm-hmm. No, just open it, catch your shell in a tmux pane and then just tell Claude Code, use that tmux pane. And it's like the Claude Code has complete control of the reverse shell.
And this was like, both of these events were like the first ones where you used Claude Code significantly.
Yeah, dude. It was game changing.
Yeah.
I felt like I got so much deeper, so much faster. And I was actually explaining to you when over lunch the other day, it's a little bit weird because you get a lot of depth, but I feel like it doesn't have enough time to like marinate with me a little bit, right? So like I understand things so much faster and I'm able to find very impactful bugs really quickly. But then I'll think about it like the next day and I'm like, man, how did that work? How did I do that?
You have less comprehension of what you're actually doing.
Yeah, I'm just sitting there. I'm trying to remember like, you know, I swear that I know I reported something about that. Like normally it would be like branded in my brain.
Yeah.
You know, if I had just found a vulnerability, I was like, yeah, I know exactly how that works.
Right.
You know, but I was like, man, I was having a little bit of trouble remembering what happened because I didn't have my hands on it quite as much.
And I think what triggered that is you were asking me about one of my bugs and I was struggling to remember.
Yeah.
And I think it was the same thing. Yeah.
It's a little tricky, man, because it's becoming a lot more like ideation, direction, and then watching it do it.
Yes.
Whereas I feel like personally, I'm a very kinesthetic learner, you know, where I'm like, if I need to get my hands on something to learn.
Tactile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that's going to be like for my long-term hacker growth, but it's kind of addicting, not going to lie.
Right. Yeah. So one thing I was going to mention was I feel like from this event, there were like those creative AI vulnerabilities almost we're in like a new class of vulnerabilities that I'm now going to look for going forward. And, you know, we're not going to talk specifics, but I feel like the types of exfiltration methods that we saw were unique in a way where you know, some were almost binary and then some were almost like shorter than binary, but not full response, but they can have just as much impact as like a, what you would consider a full exfil in the past. And I think a lot of people aren't thinking about the different like ways in which you could exfiltrate data.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we saw, I guess what I had kind of perceived previously as exfiltration methods was I can get characters out.
Yes, you know? Like full characters.
But I think it's a good point that there are a lot of people that were able to get either yes or no
right.
out or encode data, you know, in an almost sort of binary format.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, yes, no.
Right.
You know, you've got one Boolean there.
Yeah.
You've got the next bit there, the next bit, and right. then kind of encode things directly. Mm-hmm. And even though you're just getting a small bit of information out, that can be really impactful,
right.
you know,
yeah.
Depending on what your AI has access to.
Right.
And with Google, your AI has access to a lot of
stuff.
Your
email, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Or all of your documents.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So very impactful to be able to even do minor exfiltration. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think we won't talk specifics here, but I think there was like two or three examples where HTML injection resulted in much more impact than I would have expected.
Yeah, totally.
From like multiple show and tells.
I agree. Yeah, that was surprising.
And so definitely get creative with that if you have that from like an AI response, basically.
Yeah. All right. Let me ask you one of these broader questions. Like, did you have any takeaways from this event on hacking Google specifically? Like the niches that they have?
Yeah. I think multiple people found great bugs by keeping up with features.
Oh yeah,
like
totally.
They're constantly shipping new AI features, and they're constantly shipping connection points, basically pivot points or overlapping features, where something comes out that affects two products, or a feature in one product affects another one. And I know Kieran specifically found multiple bugs in those connection points, and then there are multiple places where Valentino found like a single bug that then applied to all of the products or all of the features.
Yeah,
and some of the kind of like. Things that are unreleased that we got access to in scope wise are also going to be that exact same way. So it's going to be like a cross platform, or like a cross Gemini feature that I think can have way more impact than it would be in like a single location.
Yeah. But on the flip side of that, we've also seen a lot of, well, they fixed it here, but it works over here. The same technique, right?
Yes.
Because so much development is happening so quickly.
And a lot of regressions.
Yeah.
I think Bus had multiple regressions that were basically reports from the past.
Yeah.
And when you're getting paid well for those.
Yeah, dude, it's worth it to set up some regression testing, like just, mm-hmm. you know, remind yourself, set a reminder, you know, have CLUD code something up, you know, to do that regression testing. These are, you know, very well paid bugs.
Yeah. And I think because the nature of AI bugs are like delivery and then, either, you know, different types of impact, whether it's a rogue action or an exfiltration, like any of those three can kind of regress and all of a sudden like re-enable a bug.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. And not just Google, but other platforms as well.
Yeah.
I know specifically, I'm pretty sure that, I guess I can't say the name of the company, but I'll just say it and then we can bleep it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that this has happened multiple times across their different AI chat features
where
all of a sudden an old exfil like happens again. And it's because they're adding features, right? They're either adding like a new way to like render a preview or a new way to render a link or a new way to render an image. And in many chatbots, they don't even have sensitive data. So they don't worry about it at first. Then later on they add the ability to fetch data. And now all of a sudden it becomes a vulnerability.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of foot guns here, and at the pace that they're moving, they're just bound to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good to see. I will say, I think that the Google AI VRP right now is like
a place to be.
It is paying out some serious money.
Yeah.
You know, like even if you don't love AI hacking and you're just a green hat, like.
Yeah, it's worth looking at.
Yeah, it's worth looking at.
And in my experience, even though they're being a little slower to pay out because of, I think, all of the AI reports, they still are consistent with paying out. So you can easily build up pipeline and still get paid.
Yeah.
Whereas it feels like a lot of other companies are just straight up like trying not to pay or
No, that's not what they're doing. Yeah,
yeah.
What Google's doing, at least. I think I also got to chat with some of the members of the team, and they're telling me like, they got to like do a talk someday on this period at Google from you know, program management perspective, mm-hmm. because so much is changing with the influx of reports,
yeah.
both valid and invalid, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
It's really forced them to adapt in ways that they wouldn't have had to do prior. So,
yeah. And I think specifically, I think it's just real good practical advice for our audience. They said that, you just need to be handwriting your reports unless you've really honed your AI report writer, that they have had valid reports basically come in that are written like slop and they've ended up having to close them. And then later on when another report comes in, they're like, have I seen something like that? And they go and look it up and it's like, oh, it was buried in the middle of this slop report that actually we couldn't even see the impact here because it was like convoluted with a bunch of like working as intended features.
Yeah.
But the, you know, Claude in that moment doesn't understand that like their API keys are gateways, right?
Yeah.
Or their discovery docs are supposed to be public or like, right. And so they've had valid bugs basically smuggled into slop that then don't get accepted because the AI just like conflated the report. Like when you're hacking on Google, like understand the report you're submitting.
Yeah. Concise. And you know, if you look at their quality standards, concise is one of the things that they are very big right. on.
Yeah.
And AI is not good at that for these sort of things. Right. So you really have to like, and I will say I have started using, yeah. I have honed my VRP reporting right. agent and it has really good output now.
Yeah.
And, but still, even with me telling it to be concise, like 15 times in the prompt,
yeah.
I still tell it, hey, cut this,
yeah.
you know, and really just get it down to bare bones, mm-hmm. technical impact based, boom, mm-hmm. you know?
You know what I did notice? I don't think you've mentioned this to me yet.
Yeah.
In this event, it felt like every single person I knew was recording videos for every bug.
Yeah, dude, you have to do it. You have to do it nowadays.
But I mean, a year ago, you were like, I feel like it was like 10% of reports had videos. You were a person who often did videos.
Yeah.
But most hackers weren't. Yeah. And the triagers could figure it out or whatever. But I think now that they have less time,
yeah.
it's like, even if they can't figure out how to fully replicate or something, if there's a good video there, they might just pass it on to the program or the video will help them figure it out or immediately show the impact.
I think it's also not something you can AI forge. So like you can AI forge a POC pretty well and you yep. can AI forge a report,
yep.
but you can't AI forge a talking head on a video, yes, you know,
you explaining right it now. As you're doing it.
Exactly. So yeah. just taking that extra, like mm-hmm. getting yourself a low friction setup mm-hmm. for recording those videos mm-hmm. and then just pounding out, you know, 2-minute POC video, you know, when you're already in the, you know, I do it right when I discover the bug.
Yes.
Like even if I don't write the report that moment,
yep.
right when I discover the bug, I pop right into a POC video, record it, save it off, and then go back and write off of that POC video.
I've actually been doing it before I even know there's a bug, if I think there's a high chance of a bug, because I don't want to have to do it again.
Especially in the non-deterministic AI world.
Exactly. No, yeah. So I'll just hit record. I'll try it. If it doesn't work, I hit stop and delete.
Yeah.
And then I just go again with a different one. And that yeah. way, the first time I pop it, I have a video.
I think there's a good bug bounty product in there of like, just like grab the last like 10 minutes of screen cap and yeah. just like be I'm able sure to exists. Cut it. I'm sure it's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should try to track that together or track that down.
I will say what I have done sometimes when I do that and I wasn't talking over it because I'm like yeah. in my office or my kids are around or whatever yeah. and I'm just doing that to make sure I get it on film. I'll then record an audio after and just like splice it on top.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I haven't done that before.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. All right. Let's see what else we got on the list here.
I wanted to talk about this idea of
yeah.
human tokens. So... Network Chuck said in a text message.
Dude, I'm looking at your list here. Do you have anything that's not AI related on here?
Listen, this is an AI event, Justin.
Okay, all right, hit me.
Actually, I'll coming back in a minute because I'm going to talk about a technical
I brought up Claude Code plus TMUX, so
it's fine. Right,
fine.
No. I'm jumping away from AI to talk about something technical
right,
and then we'll come back.
All right.
One cool thing, and I think this is just something neat to look for in Google, but in other companies too. Is actions that are being taken by like SDKs or by APIs or by MCP servers, mm-hmm. They often will need to be associated with a grant of mm-hmm. like some OAuth grant.
Mm.
And I had two bugs in OAuth grants on this where basically the AI or the MCP server or whatever were taking actions that were not allowed, that were like a scope expansion of the OAuth grant that you gave it.
Mm.
I don't think many people are looking at that because it's like you just click through and then like you're just using the app later. You're not like thinking back to what you actually gave it permission to do.
Mm. So these SDKs or these MCP servers or APIs or whatever that people are hooking into the AI products that they're developing.
Yeah. You do some OAuth flow or some grant where yeah. like you do the checkboxes.
Yeah.
It can have access to this and this, but then if it has access to more than that.
It's weird because if they're doing the OAuth grant, then you would assume that they're using the resulting token. But I guess that resulting token is just not being validated at whatever API there. I think
sometimes that token is just basically used to like give you permission into the feature. And then the AI has some sort of different permission.
Weird, weird. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Well, that did make me think though. SDKs, I've been meaning to talk about this on the pod for a while. I saw somebody, I won't name who, at a live hacking event maybe 4 years ago, just absolutely destroy one of the hardest scopes by finding a bunch of bugs in their SDKs.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were just straight up traversals.
Yeah. You know? What's funny about that is I feel like back then, it's like, oh, I don't want to do code review during a live hacking event.
Yeah.
And no one would do it. Now I feel like it's like, oh, I'll just give Flat Code this code, right?
Exactly.
So yeah. It's actually easier than it ever has been before too.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, a lot of these were just, I mean, you could definitely feed it to Cloud Code. Some of the things that I prime it with as well are like, hey, look for areas where there are path traversals off of user input,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I think that one, is that yours?
Yeah
okay. Because I think one of the things with that is that a lot of times these SDKs are just wrappers around the REST, you know,
yeah.
API,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, you're passing in maybe the query or the, you know, function parameter for the SDK is like, you know, user ID or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
That user ID is inevitably landing in a path in a REST, you know, API call.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it's not, if no sanitization is occurring, mm-hmm. can you make get user turn into get organization
right.
or, you know, delete reaction turn into delete
user,
organization,
delete org,
you know,
yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Right. Yeah. That's tremendously impactful.
Yeah.
So as I was sort of reflecting on that, I realized like, man, we are very privileged to go to these live hacking events because not only do I get to see, you know, everybody's cool bugs, but I also get to sort of develop a playbook
right.
for how what to approach works. Various scopes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gives me a lot of more confidence as a hacker.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, because yeah, you one, hone it yourself by trying it during the event. Two, you see it, what other people were doing by talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to see what the highest possible outcome is when you see show and tell.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's freaking beautiful, man. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I want to mention this human tokens thing.
Okay.
So Network Chuck mentioned in like a group chat recently that like he said something like, don't waste your human tokens on it. And I thought that was one, just a clever phrase, right? Because like, you know, applying kind of AI lingo to like our life or like our just the ways that we think about things.
Yeah.
But then I personally was talking with another hacker at the event and I felt like he hadn't advocated on his behalf very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of took human tokens and like turned it into like brain tokens and mouth tokens, you know, like where brain tokens, like you're like using your own effort to hack on things. And then the mouth tokens, what I meant in that moment was basically like he wasn't advocating for himself.
Yeah.
And I think that this is actually something that I run into a lot. I think that, it's either in your nature or your experience through life hacking events has made you good at it. And I think I'm B tier at it, right? But I think that there are a lot of hackers I know, both some in the live hacking event circuit and some that are not, that don't do a very good job of spending their, you know, mouth tokens on advocating for themselves. And yeah. I think it's hard because there's like three layers to it. One is like how to know when to push back, like how to know whether your bug is worthy of actually fighting for, because I think you can lose a lot of respect fighting for bugs that aren't valid.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And then I think like on the other hand, a lot of people have great bugs, but they didn't articulate it well, or they got a bad triager and then they just kind of let it go to the wayside and they don't fight for themselves.
That last one, that pisses me off.
Right.
Dude. Like as somebody who does like to advocate, you know, if I see, you know, a valid bug go down the drain, you know, I'm like, or even just get, you know, paid as a lower or medium,
right.
It's a higher crit.
Yeah.
Hold me back.
Yeah. And so I think my advice or what I was suggesting that the audience is like, kind of know the difference there. And when you actually have a ground, like solid footing to stand on, like actually stand up for yourself in a kind of respectful way. But then the other thing is like, who do you push back against and how do you do it? Like, what do you say?
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I think that like people can fall apart at any step in that process, like not knowing what to stand up for, like what to push back on. And then like, if I do reach out, who do I reach out to, right? It's like sometimes mediation requests never get answered. But like even in the live hacking scene, it's like, you know what? You actually do maybe have more access to people than you realize. I know you know that, but I feel like there are some people, like even you know, the person I'm talking about, you know,
yeah,
from the
event. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
He like didn't go to the people. And it's like, you're at an event with the people, just go to the
That's
people
the whole
inside
value
the thing.
Add. Yeah.
Right. And then like when you go to them, you know, like how do you approach this? Like,
yeah.
And I think there are strategies in each of those.
Yeah. I think just one of the things I've had success with that is just going up to them and saying, hey, you know, you're going to triage this bug eventually. Do you want me to just show you how to do it real quick? You know, and just like, and just
Speed
walk them through it, you know? And, but also, you know, you mentioned this with collabing with the Googlers as well, having a hit list, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you're going to meet with somebody,
yeah.
be like, all right, look, we need to cover this report.
Yeah.
Right. You've got them in a list. You know exactly what you want to say.
Yeah.
You know what the key like elevator pitch of this bug mm-hmm. is.
Yeah.
Right. And you boom, 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 boom. Right. Because they're busy right now.
Yeah.
You know, this is a live hack event.
Yeah. And you can even like summarize it at the end of each of those points. Like, okay, good. So we think this one's a high.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you exactly. say those things.
I do.
A lot of times whenever I hear other people talking to them, they don't say that action statement at the end.
Yeah.
All right. So we agree this is a high.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what you, yeah. that's what you need. You
exactly.
need like, what's the commitment
to lock
at the end
it
of
in.
This? Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Lock it in.
And then notate that for them. So then DM them,
yeah.
you know, the,
or if you're feeling really bold, comment on the report.
Yeah.
Say, this guy said this is a high.
Exactly. And I always do that.
Do you really?
I do. For sure. 100% of the time, because it's like, that's the official track record. Notating that meeting with
yes.
that person.
Yeah.
You know, and that tells them, you know, oh, where to pick off.
I think you're one in 50 that does that though.
Yeah. It is pretty rare. That is one of the things I've done from the beginning though. That one was, I think, more of a nature than a nurture thing,
yeah,
to
yeah.
be honest.
Yeah.
But all right, let's jump into some other technical stuff here.
Sure.
One of the things, you know, no surprise here, but one of the things that makes hacking Google difficult is they use protobuf mm-hmm. All over the place. And a lot of times it's protojson, which is more friendly than actual like protobuf.
Yeah.
But there were a couple situations in this event where I was looking at actual, you know, binary protobuf.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pain in the ass, dude. It is super difficult to work with.
Yeah.
So I was kind of researching a good solution for that. And the best one that I came upon, and I do really like, is this command line utility called Protoscope,
okay.
which allows you to just define, you know, numbers and then values. So, okay, field number 2, mm-hmm. colon, you know, curly brackets, string,
sure.
and now it's a string,
yep.
right? You know, okay, field 4, it's a sub-object, so curly brackets, and now we're doing 3, colon,
sure.
integer, 6, you
yeah.
know? And you kind of need the keys, or you need to brute force, so you need to, you know, mm. have some way to know what you're encoding here.
Yeah.
Or, you know, take an existing protobuf mm-hmm. and decode it, and then tweak it and then re-encode it, right? Mm-hmm. So Protoscope can take, you know, valid binary protobuf, decode it, and put it in this like text readable format for humans. Mm. Then you tweak it a little bit, re-encode it, and then you get your, you know, valid protobuf.
Does it open in like them or something?
No, it's like a standard in, standard out sort of situation.
Okay,
so you cat data into it or whatever,
yeah.
and then you know, you got your file and you pipe it back
got
in
it. Yeah,
and
yeah.
it converts it back into like a you know, binary blob
yep.
or whatever. And then typically I base64 encode it. What I've been doing is base64 encoding it and then dropping it into Kaido and then just selecting it and adding a base64 decode workflow.
Hmm.
And then that just ensures that there's no like stray bytes and stuff like that that you're not seeing, and it just keeps it nice and clean.
Yeah. Could you have just used like curl with a like a proxy forward?
I'm sure I could have.
Okay.
Yeah, but I like to like have it inside of replay so
yeah.
I can, you know, use some of my other features as well.
Yeah.
So Protoscope is the name of that tool, and it is very helpful. I think I'm thinking of making a wrapper for it in Kaido.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
Sweet, dude. I don't think that I have anything else. Did you want to mention?
Yeah. Okay. I've got one more that I'll hit yeah. before the end of this. So like I mentioned, you know, we did the Google event, but before that I was going super ham on the, live hacking event with HackerOne. I don't know that the target's public, so I'm not going to mention it. But yeah, that was a very fun time, and it was a lot of WebSockets, and that was something that I had not played around with a lot before.
Yeah.
And you guys know I'm a big Kaido fan, but Kaido is did not have really good WebSocket support.
Yeah.
You know, in time for this event. Now I'm told that they are shipping new, you know, WebSocket repeater, you know, equivalent, right?
Yeah.
In Kaido, very soon. And I did help them design that interface a little bit. Nice. And it is quite good. That being said, what we did have to do here was upstream, you know, burp to do the replay back and forth.
Okay.
But man, it's a fun attack surface, man. Yeah. It feels nice to do something that isn't straight HTTP. Mm-hmm. And I think it is less understood and less assessed.
Yeah. Actually, I think it was Kieran Monkey like a year ago was like probing into some WebSocket stuff, and he found so many weird behaviors. Like, I don't think that he ended up popping anything on it, but I like when he was talking about it, I was
man. Dude, he's got some good research on that. We should, Kieran, I know you listen to this. You need to go finish that research, dude. I know that you have the docs, you know, laying around. That was freaking good research.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do that and put it on the CTBB research lab.
Perfect.
Okay, last bit. Another thing that I looked at recently quite a bit, actually at both spanning both life hacking events, was webhook architecture.
Right.
And the way that these various apps sort of duct tape things together. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get right. By nature of webhooks, there are public endpoints that are processing them.
Right.
That's the whole point, is to like introduce third-party integration.
Yeah.
There's a lot, you know, one that's interesting scope. Mm-hmm. Where does that data go? How is it authenticated? Is that authentication done correctly? Mm-hmm. I think that it is underused scope as well, because it is something that a lot of people shy away from, like particularly cryptographic validation, right? Like, are these JWTs being processed properly? Sure. Like, is there a signature here? Okay, well, I hate my life. You know, I'm never going to try to hack this, even though I just need to take the, you know, freaking JSON blob and SHA-256 hash it, you know?
Yeah. Any bit of friction.
Yeah, it's friction. But the thing is, you know, Claude just deletes it, man. It really does.
Deletes the friction.
Yeah, it deletes it. It totally deletes the friction. So, you know, you can just say, hey, you know, SHA this, you know, and it does it beautifully, you know. Mm-hmm. So even if it's a tamper signature even, right, like that's a boundary a lot of people don't want to cross.
Sure. Like if you change the request at all, you have to like re-sign it all.
Then like just basic things like, you know, hash extensions, you know, bit flipping and stuff. You know, a lot of people kind of move away from anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it's very interesting scope, I think.
Yeah. And it resulted in some sick bugs today.
It did. Not going to lie. It did. So, all right, man. It is getting late. You want to call it a wrap on that?
It is very late. Yes.
All right. Sweet. GG. And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time. Trust me. All right, I'll see you there.